Today on Vox Talks, does the business cycle increase inequality? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. In the US, the graph of earnings inequality over the last 50 years or so shows the difference between high earners and low earners getting consistently bigger. And we've heard a lot about how this is due to technology. But do recessions have a more persistent impact on inequality than we thought? Well, that's the intriguing premise of a new CEPR discussion paper, and Gianluca Violante of Princeton, he's also a CEPR fellow, is one of the authors. Gianluca, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hi, Tim. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, when we think about inequality, we always tend to think about the difference between the top earners, the skilled workers, and the rest. That has been increasing, hasn't it? How long has that been going on?
Yes, there are. Let me begin by saying that there are various dimensions of inequality that have been under economists' microscopes. So there's inequality in income, in wealth, in consumption, and they're all very relevant, all clearly related, connected to each other, but also distinct enough that it's important to be clear about the fact that today we're going to be discussing the time trend in earnings inequality.
Oh, yes,
so labor income inequality. And by earnings, I want to be precise, I mean hourly wages times hours work. Earnings inequality started increasing in the late 70s, early 80s. And as you said, the empirical and theoretical as well literature in macro and labor has been mostly fascinated with the fact that the top of the distribution of income has taken off relatively to the middle. So for example, the share of total income accruing to the top, say 1%, has doubled over this period from roughly 10% to at least 20, if not more, 25%. And another important measure of this increase in inequality, income inequality at the top, is the so-called college premium. So the wage gap between a college graduate and a high school graduate that has also roughly doubled over this period. Now, the chief explanation for the rise in the college premium, and you mentioned it earlier, is technology, is what economists call skill bias, technological change. So starting from, again, sort of late 70s, we witnessed a very deep structural technological transformation that is favoring skilled workers and arming unskilled ones. So think of IT and robots replacing low-educated labor and being complementary, essentially, to workers with the knowledge, the skills, and abilities that commonly acquired in college or just simply correlated with college education. I would add that to understand the takeoff of the very top of the 1%, my view is that one needs to add what economists call a superstar effect to skill-based technical change, either at the level of the firm or at the level of the individual worker. So, you know, in a nutshell, this means sort of that the very best in each profession or the best firms command a much larger return to their labor services for the workers or the goods and services they sell for firms, because technology and globalization have increased their market reach. They essentially increased the market size. That's pretty much what's going on at the top.
But in your paper and in our discussion today, we've focused on the bottom half of the earnings distribution. Why?
Yeah, that's correct. Well, I mean, for a start, because pretty much all has been said already about the top. So we need a new research question. I mean, also, I find a great deal of acrimony in the discussion about top income and wealth inequality. I think it's a very politicized and ideological space. I'm not very comfortable in there. But, you know, more seriously and more directly to your question, I mean, fundamentally, I think that from a welfare perspective, it's much more important to understand the dynamics of earnings and welfare at the bottom of the distribution than at the top. And designing the right policies to support this group can lead to real improvements in the quality of life and the wellness of low-income families and low-income kids.
And are the dynamics in the bottom half of this distribution different?
Yes, they are different. Essentially, you see two things happening at the bottom. One is very similar to what happens at the top, and the other is quite different. So the ratio of earnings between, say, the median and the bottom, say, 20-30%, opens up substantially. So inequality increases also. However, what is different is that the dynamics of inequality, the pattern of inequality, is extremely cyclical at the bottom. And instead, it's very much like a straight time trend at the top. So in other words, if you split sort of the 90-10 earnings differential between the 1950 and the 50-10, the 50-10 is much more counter-cyclical than the 1950. So inequality at the bottom rises in recession and falls in expansions.
So we have a little bit of a mystery here, don't we, that we've got two halves of the distribution behaving differently.
Yeah.
In your paper, the next thing you looked at was hours worked. What clues were you looking for here?
Yeah, that is correct. So decomposing the change in earnings, in labor earnings, at various points in the distribution between hourly wages and annual hours worked gives the right clues to solve this mystery, as you call it. Let me be extra precise about something important here. So from now on, I will mostly talk about a specific demographic group, which is the focus of our work, which is prime age men.
Mm-hmm.
So at the top, essentially the entire earnings gap between workers, say in the 90th percentile and above, compared to those around the median, is explained by different dynamics in hourly wages. All workers, essentially above the median, have a very strong attachment to the labor force. And again, these are men, right? They tend to work full-time and all year round. However, hourly wages of those at the top rise steadily over the last 50 years by something like 70%, while wages of the median worker are stagnant. And this has been, you know, the object of many debates among policymakers.
Mm.
So essentially, it's all in the different dynamics of hourly wages. And this is, my understanding, is essentially a direct effect of skill bias technical change. Everyone is working at the top, but the skills at the top command a higher return. And the returns to skill have gone up. And so so inequality opens up at the top because of essentially the higher returns to skills. At the bottom, it's kind of the opposite. So wages, hourly wages, are stagnant for all from the median down. But it's hours worked that have essentially fallen precipitously for the low-educated men. To give you a sense, annual weeks worked, they fall by 60%.
Ooh.
In the bottom of the earnings distribution compared to the middle. So fundamentally, low-skilled men in the US are earning less and less than the middle class because they no longer work, because they no longer participate actively to the labor market. And the data are quite striking in how they show clearly that this decline in participation tends to occur in recessions and tends to have some kind of long-lasting effect, especially after big downturns, big recession. Often the employment rates of the low-skilled men, they really never recover to pre-recession levels.
I see. So the recessions aren't something that at the bottom of the distribution people bounce back from. You built a model with this data that you found out and calibrated it to represent this. Does this mean that you can investigate counterfactuals, other worlds in which this doesn't happen?
Yeah, that's right. So we have a model in which we have kind of two key components. The first is a cyclical force that moves the economy between booms and recessions, and the other one is a trend component, essentially a skill bias technical change. The way we think about recessions are times in which many workers lose their job. Recessions are characterized often by an initial spike in job destruction. Many workers are thrown into unemployment, often for a long time, and during unemployment, the market value of their skills is eroded. This can happen for many reasons, right? Because when separated, workers lose firm-specific human capital, sector-specific, occupational-specific, if they're forced to switch occupations. But there's also evidence that the duration of unemployment has a negative impact on future earnings. It could be because of skill depreciation or just stigma. It's not clear what is the fundamental reason. To some extent, it doesn't really matter for the purpose of the paper or the explanation. Also, workers with sizable tenure tend to have accumulated some rents because of outside offers, for example, and this search capital is lost upon separation. So the bottom line is that the re-employment earnings of workers tend to be lower and lower for a long time. That's kind of the scattering effect of recessions. And so it makes sense that many marginal workers decide to quit the labor force and, for example, either collect benefits or enjoy additional leisure. It's a completely rational decision. So the scattering effect explains the rise of non-participation of low-skilled worker men in recessions. And it can explain why earnings inequality at the bottom rises in recession. So going back to our model, when we simulate in our model the U.S. economy with both this sort of underlying trend, which is skill bias technical change, which means that every period the returns to skill rise a little at a constant rate. So the low-skilled workers constantly lose ground. And the cycle, which has this embedded sort of this scattering effect, we can replicate the dynamics of inequality both at the top and the bottom of the distribution. And as you can say, you know, the reason why one writes models is because it has the ability to perform counterfactuals. The main counterfactual we do is one where we separate the role of these two forces, trend and cycle. We uncover an insight that is quite novel and we think it's important, which is the major role played by the interaction between the cycle and the trend, between recession and skill-based radical change. These are sort of two drivers that tend to reinforce each other in pushing low-skilled workers who lose their job out of the labor market. The long-term unemployment and the associated permanent effect on earnings occurring against this backdrop of a secular downward trend in low-skilled wages causes many low-skilled individuals to exit the labor force during recessions. So it's what we call a double whammy.
And this double whammy is why you call the paper The Cycle Drives the Trend, because that's what's happening. The business cycle in this part of the earnings distribution is driving that trend.
Yes, yes, exactly. And, you know, classic business cycle theory in macro tends to represent recessions as very temporary phenomena without long-term consequences. It's pretty much the standard way to think about economic fluctuations. But what we show is that recessions, they always cause persistent increasing inequality at the bottom of the income distribution. This combination, this sort of amplification effect that you get by combining recession and skill bias technical change that plays a big role. In fact, in our key counterfactual, we calculated this is a thought experiment, we could have avoided all recessions, but also all booms at the same time. So if the economy had been in a sort of a normal state since 1967, the employment rate of prime-age males would have declined by half compared to the data. So only 5 percentage points instead of 10 percentage points. And many more low-skilled men would have kept working in their prime age, and possibly poverty would be significantly lower now.
Yes, because we have heard a lot about the plight of workers in the lower end of the earnings distribution with less skills recently. It's all been bad news.
Yes.
We've heard about their health outcomes. We've heard about deaths of despair.
Correct.
Does this add to that narrative?
So you're referring to the research by Deaton and Paxson mostly, right? I think it's a fascinating work. So in their book, they argue that there are now many more deaths among the low-skilled, the low-educated because of suicides, diseases related to, say, drinking or drugs, drug abuse, and so on. And my understanding is that they do attribute part of this trend to the disappearing of sort of decent labor market opportunities for low-educated American men, which used to have middle-class careers in the manufacturing sector. And now the manufacturing sector is disappearing. It's an interesting point you raise. It's not something that we address explicitly in the paper, so I would speculate that this sort of double whammy effect that we document for the compounding of recession and adverse trends can certainly add to this phenomenon. I mean, it means that recessions can be quite devastating for certain communities, certain geographical areas, which used to thrive on employment, on jobs that got sort of wiped out by the inexorable process of technological change. And much of this process is concentrated during recession. I would just conclude by saying that sort of this detachment of the labor force of men is also very detrimental for families. So men are often husbands and fathers. So women end up finding themselves effectively as single mothers, and kids find themselves in broken families. And we know from a ton of research that growing up in this type of families has negative long-term consequences on social and economic outcomes.
I guess when you started doing this research, Gianluca, you didn't know quite how abruptly this business cycle would end and how deep this recession would be. So does the outcome of this research make you worry about the impact of COVID-19 on inequality and on low earners?
Well, yeah. No, when we started, we started much earlier than when the epidemic hit. Well, I think there is still a great deal of uncertainty about the long-term effects of this recession, whether it's something that can end soon or going to stay with us for a long time. I think it is a fascinating question, and we are currently working on a follow-up of our paper that is precisely focused on the current recession. You know, the data we analyzed for the U.S., the historical data, as well as the model that we develop, predict that this kind of amplification effect of recession is especially strong for deep and long-lasting recession. It's a sort of a nonlinear effect, like small recession and short recession don't have this double whammy is not really there. But as soon as the recession starts becoming severe, then you start having sort of this amplification, very strong amplification. And there are a few elements specific to this episode that kind of worry me in this respect. The first one is the sheer size of separations, of job destruction that has been enormous, unprecedented. Hopefully, most of them will turn out to be just temporary layoffs and workers will be reabsorbed. But honestly, I'm less optimistic about even the first, you know, that this second wave or you know, prolonged first wave of the epidemic, the way it's hitting again in the US at least. And also, I think we have to recognize the fact that the shock has two components, right? This COVID shock. One is a sort of a supply shock, which is just generated by essentially necessary government regulation, essentially the lockdown. And this is by nature temporary. I mean, it's not going on forever. We might have a second one, but it's going to be another 3 months and it will disappear. But the other component of the shock, which is the demand side, right? The demand for what you can call the social good or contact intensive services, that is pretty much permanent. It was very persistent. It will lead to a very persistent reduction in the size of certain sectors. It will lead to the need to reallocate labor across sectors. You know, and labor reallocation is a process that takes a long time and it's very slow. And in the meantime, many, many long-term unemployed workers tend to give up and exit the labor force for good. The last element that makes me worried is policy. So social insurance has been extremely generous in the US. And I think this was definitely the right thing to do. But there is a trade-off between like short run and medium run. I think in the short run, and probably for the next few months at least, still, we'll have to worry about providing enough resources to workers who have been hit very badly, in particular, workers working in rigid occupations for which you cannot really work from home, in the contact intensive sector. That has to be the priority. But in the medium run, I think policy has to shift and the priority has to be the reallocation of labor. Otherwise, you risk creating very perverse incentives for labor supply. And once you do that, then you kind of worsen the chances that workers that lost their job will end up working again. The risk of a rise in permanent rise of non-participation, I think, is very high.
Well, we'll look out for the follow-up paper. But meanwhile, Gianluca, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
Now, the paper we've been talking about is called The Rise of US Earnings Inequality. Does the Cycle Drive the Trend? And the authors are Jonathan Heathcote, Fabrizio Peri, and Giovanni Violante. It is discussion paper 14870 at the CEPR if you want to look it up that way. And it's also forthcoming in the Review of Economic Dynamics, I think, Gianluca. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. It's forthcoming in a special issue that celebrates the 25-year anniversary of the publication of Frontiers of Business Cycle Research, a book that was edited by Tom Cooley and has been really an instrumental book in the development of the research program on business cycles in macro.
Well, congratulations on that. Meanwhile, this has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week, so subscribe to Vox Talks, you will never miss an episode. And remember, you can find 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.